Welcome to Podcast on Infinite Earths, an unofficial DC Studios podcast. I'm your host, Tyson.
And I'm your host, Porter.
And we're both writers, editors, and part-time filmmakers who love superheroes. Welcome to our show.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Today we're going to be breaking down Superman 2, yet another Christopher Reeves classic. Porter, what are your initial thoughts?
Okay, I honestly think I liked this one more than the first one.
Really?
I genuinely think so. I liked kind of what I was expecting would happen, where it got the origin stuff out of the way in the first one, so in this one they can kind of just run wild with it, and that's what they decide to do, and they certainly up the stakes, they up the storytelling. I feel like the final act, while it might not be as like bombastic as putting California back together and amongst other things, but it feels very epic finale. Like, I feel like they stepped up their game a little bit. But what did you think? I know it's been a minute for you, so you only remembered a couple scenes.
It was fun. It was definitely a good time to see the more epic and almost like scary Superman villains, right? Because they have actual power over like just Lex's intellect. Though it was interesting that they brought Lex back into this. You made a good point that it's possible, if not likely, that they'll bring some of these villains back for 3 and 4. I don't know how creative they'll get with that, but to start off, it was kind of interesting that they like started off with it was almost like when you get like a new episode of a show, right? And they're just like, previously, you know, just to kind of recap last week's episode. But it was for a movie which came out 3 years previous, which I can't say I've seen before.
Yeah, that was unique. And, well, I suppose VHSs didn't get big until the 80s. I understand that, like, movies prior to that, you would have to go see in a theater to watch again. So I could understand the reasoning behind putting a previously on montage, kind of the major points of the previous movie over the credits. Like, it's fine. I could see why they do it. I think it's one of those things when you're streaming it on Max now that it's a little goofy, but
right.
I could see where they were coming from.
It was interesting, and it did not work, and we were kind of speculating why they would have done that, because once again, I mean, for all of the 70s and 80s movies that we've seen, never once has that been something we've come across. It's just kind of an interesting way to approach that.
For sure, yeah. Speaking of the beginning, you show up. I literally put this note down because we both were like, holy crap, that's so cool. But when Superman shows up at the Daily Planet and he just like throws his hat behind him and it lands on the coat hanger, like, that was awesome.
Quite literally a hat trick, and it was beautiful. I am so curious how many takes that took them, because it was clean.
It was. I also think that just the whole beginning, I mean, I guess it starts at the Daily Planet when they talk about the Paris terrorists, but I feel like that was a fun opening conflict to start out with, right? I mean, he doesn't do a ton, but, and it leads to the escape of General Zod and his followers from the Phantom Zone, but it's a solid, like, just opener, right? Just kind of gets people back in the mood for Superman.
It's kind of fun. You're totally right. I mean, we get Lois, who's in danger, classic just foreign terrorist kind of energy, and then Superman's, you know, killer move where he just takes a bomb into space. Love that. And it did make me laugh when the hologram came back later and she was like, there's only like one way they could maybe be released from the Phantom Zone, and that's if like a nuclear blast went off near it. And that just got a little too specific for me.
Yeah, I wonder if that was like something they wrote in after the fact.
I guess the exposition seemed unnecessary, but I don't know. I guess it worked all right. It was kind of a funny scene to see them released from the Phantom Zone, but fun to get them as villains. They're properly scary.
That's for sure. I mean, when they pull up to the moon and they're just terrorizing the astronauts, it's very like, I don't know, like they're playing with their food, right? They're not really concern with them as living beings. No. They're kind of more curious from like the same way we would be curious about an ant farm, right?
You're entirely right. That was kind of a fun way to introduce them. And strangely enough, with the moon's low gravity, it was still scary, even though they were floating away in an almost kind of slow-mo and vaguely comical. Like, when you think about, like, the deep darkness of space and the way that, like, it will, like, actually kill you when they rip your suit is, like, I don't know. They didn't show anything too graphic, but the way that they were just kind of yeeting, like, astronauts away, like, it got...
Yeah, like, the one guy that he literally... just throws him.
He like lassoed him up with like his own like oxygen supply, and then yeah, just popped it out and threw him out.
Yeah, like that would be a terrible way to go.
I'm with you there. And we got even more really confusing clothes transitions in this movie.
Oh yeah. Oh,
where they yeah. just they went heavy on the special effects and just this weird fade where we're expected to believe that one of his powers includes just changing into a suit, you know?
Yeah, must be. I mean, so speaking of the suit, I know last time I was kind of ragging on it. I mean, and I still don't think it looks that great, but in this movie, like, it was not as big of like a standout bother to me. Like, I was just kind of like, yeah, like it works. It's what it is. And I guess what I'm saying is it grew on me a bit in this movie more than it did in the first one.
Grew on you a bit. And I'm not sure if it was, you know, you kind of got used to it, or if it was just Zod and his lackeys' fits were so visually distracting that Superman seemed okay by comparison.
There you go. That could be it. Yeah, there you go.
I got to say, one of the scenes that I thoroughly enjoyed the most was Lois and Clark at Niagara Falls. She keeps making fun of him for, like, having a lack of vision because he wears glasses.
Yeah.
So then she's like, and your glasses are filthy. And she pulls them off his face. And you can see him, like, panicking because that's his only disguise.
Seriously, I thought he had, like, the music cue be yep. like, dun, dun, like.
And the look of recognition on her face. And you're like, oh, my gosh, she knows.
That was a very funny way to start that suspicion. Yeah.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Lois, like, trying to kill herself to prove that he's Superman?
You know, it's not the first time I've seen that, as far as Lois putting herself in danger to kind of force his hand to turn himself into Superman. But I think that it worked fun enough this time because we both thought that he was going to cave and he was going to turn into Superman. But
yeah,
he somehow, I mean, he loses his laser vision and she's able to make it to safety, and it works out. It's fun. But then the scene after, he reveals to her that he's Superman in the hotel room. So, like, we kind of got the best of both worlds, right? She finds out that he's Superman, but we also got a fun little side thing where she's going down the river and he has to figure out a way to save her without caving and turning into Superman.
It was kind of fun. It was expected, right? You're like, she's obviously about to die. He has to do something about it. But he kept not doing something. And this may be jumping the gun a little bit, but it felt almost a little dissatisfying for her to, like, figure out he's Superman and have kind of this complex relationship with him throughout the movie, where she's, like, trying to consolidate her relationship with Clark and with Superman as being the same person, even though he believes, like, it's all so clear now because he can just be with Lois. I mean, right, he becomes human for her. Like, he is head over heels. And then by the end of it, he just... I don't know precisely what he did, but he just, like, sucked the memory out of her, so she now doesn't know his secret identity. It felt like a very lost, like, all the work was for nothing, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. The movie did a lot of character work with the Lois and Superman dynamic for that just to be reset. And it doesn't help that the memory wipe thing isn't super explained. It was cleverly done, right? Like, it'd be different if he found, like, a device on his Fortress of Solitude that did that, or, like, a potion that was left behind at the fortress. But for him to just kind of be able to kiss her, I don't know. It seems strange, but
I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's a Superman movie, I guess, at this point.
I feel like maybe they're a lot less worried about the explanation for things. Like, canon wasn't too big of a deal back then. They probably didn't have quite as many nerds, at least with a platform that could,
yeah, before the internet,
right, call them out for any of this kind of stuff. So we can laugh now and make fun of it, but I'm sure plenty of audiences were willing to accept it. I mean, we still accept that a DeLorean traveled back to the future, so
yeah. So speaking of when they first get back to the Fortress of Solitude, the whole thing where the hologram of his mom, I believe,
yeah,
says, oh yeah, you have to become a human if you want to be with her, doesn't make a lot of sense. But no, he gets into the chamber, and I feel like that added a great sense of like stakes, because as an audience, we're omnipotent in the sense that we know that Zod is there and he's terrorizing people. Superman doesn't know that. So we as the audience are like, don't turn human yet, dude. But he does anyway. So that adds like a sense of stress of like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen, right? How is he going to get out of it?
It was kind of interesting. And that is a fairly classic arc when it comes to, you know, the omnipotent being who has to give it all up to be with somebody that they love. That, you know, has been done before. But you make a good point that, like, the reasoning behind it wasn't terribly well explained. It just was. But it was a fine setup for how he defeated them in the end. And I thought the sequence that they had pretty soon after that, where it kind of showed his fall from power in the diner, where, like, he actually couldn't, you know, defend himself or Lois, like, it was kind of devastating. I mean, for me as an audience member, right, seeing Clark, like, Superman, like, just kind of weak and unable to do his thing.
I feel like it was clever character writing to have him still have that sense of morals, right? Like, oh, someone's doing something bad, I'm gonna try and help, even though he doesn't have his powers,
right?
It adds like character levity, and it's like, oh, okay, like he's still a good guy even if he isn't invincible,
right? That's a great point, that like he doesn't have a hero complex just because he has the power to be a hero. He has a hero complex because he's Clark Kent.
Yeah.
And that was definitely a fun setup for him to be able to rock that guy's world in the end when he finally got his powers back.
Totally.
But let's break that down. How did he get his powers back?
Dude, okay. One of my notes was that green crystal. Like, if you listen to the last episode, you know that we were both pretty confused when he finds the green crystal in the barn, because we assumed that it was kryptonite. It did not hurt him, but when he chucked it, it activated a Fortress of Solitude for him in the North Pole. Left us confused, like, okay, maybe it was like a key thing. And then in this movie, he kind of explains to Lois, like, okay, it is a key. Like, it is for sure not kryptonite, or he would have called it that.
Right.
He says that, yeah, it's what activated the Fortress of Solitude. And then later, he uses it to get his powers back, even though he was told it would be irreversible.
Yeah. It did feel just a little bit like a cop-out, just because it was all too easy for him to get them back. And of course, we got that epic moment, right, where Zod finally gets to Lois and they're kind of terrorizing the Daily Planet, and Superman gets to fly up in the window. And that's great, but I don't know, getting there felt too simple. And honestly, out of all that, the thing that bugged me the most is the fact that like the key to the Fortress of Solitude was just like lying casually in the snow the whole time. Like Lois put her purse on it at one point. Like, I don't know, that got to me.
Right. Like, you think it'd be on a pedestal.
Right, or like, you know, the center of his little console or anything else. But an interesting way for him to get his powers back. I honestly thought they were going to bring the sun into it, right? Or something reversing the red sun. I don't know. I thought there could be more there.
Yeah, that would have been a great moment for them to introduce that concept before they, I guess, how they know to go to the Daily Planet to get Lois. I thought it was a fun scene. Lex going to the White House and kind of being like, I'm going to be your human companion, right? Give me Australia, which is so fun. I mean, I think Lex's character in this movie, I thought it was a step up. Like, I think it's because he wasn't like a Bond villain in the sewers, right? Like, it felt very like he wasn't intellectual. He was playing his hand and he was trying to come out on top. Like it felt a bit more akin to like an actual genius level intellect, Lex Luthor.
Right. Using his brains to match like the godlike bronze of these Kryptonians. I love that he's just a simple man with simple wants. He just wants beachfront property.
Seriously. Don't we all?
And interesting that he kind of has a loathing for most of humanity, but feels the need to maintain the toupee.
Yeah, seriously.
Looks very important to this man.
Yeah, he's like, I don't care what humanity wants or needs, but he cares what they think.
Yeah, he does. One thing that made me laugh was the sequence when Zod and his lackeys finally like arrived on Earth and called it Houston. First of all, it was awesome.
It was so fun.
And they like kind of end up at this lake and Zod just like goes into the water and then rises out and like just starts walking on the water, which was a pretty...
It was a good effect.
It was a good effect. We were kind of speculating how they did that. It looked cool. It was unnecessary as like a plot device. I don't know. Maybe they were trying to give some like he is God, you know, kind of this Jesus signal, but it looked cool. I'll have to hand them that. And then we had the funny little farmer having to spit out his coffee because he could not believe what he was seeing.
Yeah, that was a fun sequence. They didn't need to put that in there, but I'm glad they did, right?
I'm with you there.
Yeah, the whole Houston thing was a good way to just establish power levels, you know, show the viewer that, like, yeah, why they were menacing on the moon, like, they have full intent to take over the Earth. And it also sets up how Clark would be able to find out because they're being televised the whole time, and then Clark sees that in the diner, which sets off the whole thing. But yeah, it was a good midpoint thing to happen.
Totally. And kind of a neat, like, on the verge of a dark night of the soul, right? Like, he just got beat by just a mortal man, couldn't protect his lover, and then he sees that, you know, these people from his home planet have, like, taken over the world, and he realizes he doesn't have the power to stop them. It's actually really devastating for him, and he shows it in a really emotive way, much better than his emoting at the end of the first movie.
Yeah, seriously.
I was blown away by how, I don't know, I like Christopher Reeve as Superman, but I feel like it really settled in this movie that it just looks and feels right. He plays the part incredibly well.
He does. I feel like, I don't know what the difference is between this one and the last one, but he just feels a lot more comfortable in the role, and I feel like it's written in a way where he gets to shine a bit more. I'm with you. Like, the first one, I was kind of like, okay, like, people associate him with Superman because he was the first one. But then the second one, I was like, no, I get it. Like, he's quite good in it.
Yeah.
Another thing of them stepping it up was that, not final fight, but the confrontation after they go to the Daily Planet where they're fighting through the city and they're flying around, which couldn't have been easy to film back in the 80s, and they really went all out with, you know, crashing through buildings, and which is always kind of fun to see done practically. We did have that overly long blowing sequence, which they had a lot of fun with, you could tell.
Oh yeah.
But it, yeah, I mean, you mentioned that his strength levels weren't always consistent.
Not necessarily, yeah. Right, I mean, he was able to do a lot of things that I feel like made him stronger than somebody throwing a bus at him, which kind of held him down for a minute. Enough for that like entire blowing sequence, which once again was like long, and like long enough to pull you out of like the moment as an audience member. You're like, wow, this is still going.
Yep.
But you're totally right. They had fun with it, and I had fun watching it. I mean, all the people acting like they're like getting blown away, all like the crazy cars like flying through the air, and like, I actually thoroughly enjoyed that. As long and once again unnecessary as it was, like it's it's fun to see the practical effects.
For sure. Yeah, I really feel like the street fight was fun to see after. While I think the final act of the first movie was a lot of fun, kind of just watching him saving different scenarios, I think it was cool to see him fight someone on his power level.
Right.
And for the first shot at it, I feel like they did a good job.
I'm with you there. And for fighting people on his power level, it was kind of interesting to see the way that he approached taking them down. Because the final sequence ended in the Fortress of Solitude, and we got to see, obviously, them use Lois against Superman. We got to see Lex trying to play his hand and win big. We got to see Lex talk his way out of getting murdered. But yeah, I thought it was interesting and maybe a bit clever on Superman's part to reverse the effects of the chamber that took his powers away originally. Yeah, I'm once again curious if Zod and the gang are going to show up again, because they really just kicked them down this crevice.
Seemingly bottomless pit.
Yeah.
Unless they pull like a Darth Maul and just show up again. But yeah, it feels like they're super dead. But I'm with you. The final confrontation at the Fortress of Solitude, solid choice. I mean, I feel like it makes sense for Superman in the city to be like, okay, there are civilians in the way. I got to take this fight somewhere where it's like home base. And right. It succeeds, right? He's able to, while they're traveling there, like you said, swap the effect of the power sucking thing so that it affects everything outside of the chamber. And it's a clever thing. I mean, you have the really funny, like he throws the Superman suit symbol thing at one of Zod's
that
guys.
Was so out of the blue,
and he gets like wrapped in it, but then he's like fine. It's like, what did that do?
That was one of the unnecessary scenes that they probably could have left out, but it gave me a good laugh.
Totally.
Even though it completely pulled me out of the fact that this should be as like an intense fight scene.
Absolutely.
And then the whole just like disappearing bit. And, like, the finger pointer laser, like, they just threw in a lot of powers I did not realize were a thing.
Yeah, they kind of just did them all at once. But I will say, I like that the way he defeated them at the end wasn't with brute strength. It was with intellect. It was with knowing that Lex Luthor would rat him out and put him in the chamber. And it works, right?
Totally.
I think it's the smart way to do it.
Well, it's kind of fun because I feel like one of the themes of the movie is, right, brains versus bronze. How intellect can get you so far and brute strength can get you so far. And they kind of showed how Superman has a lot of both, right? And that's kind of how he was able to win in the end. Just kind of fun. One thing I did find interesting, I mean, in the first movie and this one too, is just this really strange relationship between Lois and Clark Kent and Lois and Superman. And it seems like they're going to be able to continue that through the next movie because she once again is unaware that he is Superman. It feels strange and a little bit gamey that like he is kind of like into her, approaching her from like both angles, right? I don't know. What are your thoughts on kind of this strange dynamic? Because it's definitely different in Man of Steel, and I'm curious how they're going to approach it in the new movie. We saw in the trailer, obviously, Superman kissing Lois. They have that really, like, very cinematic scene where they're kind of spinning slowly in the air. I don't know. It feels strange.
Yeah, I think the smartest thing for the new movie to do would be to get Lois, knowing he's Superman, out of the way.
Right.
Because while I think it's a fun dynamic to have Lois not know that they're the same person and that they're both crushing on her, right, from her perspective. I mean, it was done in the previous movie, and I feel like it was done fairly well in this movie. I'm sure it continues on, like you've said. I don't think that we need a repeat of that in the new movie. It does feel strange. Like, I wonder what they'll do in the third one, where, as we said previously, they did so much work to evolve that relationship, and then to have it just be wiped at the end.
A little disappointing.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see where they take it. They definitely tried an avenue, and yeah, I don't know if they were unhappy with it by the end or they just wanted to try that again, like 50 first dates or...
Yeah, not sure what their angle is, but we'll find out.
I am curious if in the new movie they're going to worry at all about his origin story, because we've seen it many a time. And I think much like Batman and Spider-Man, he is a well enough known superhero that they can finally give him a movie where they kind of skip the intro.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that they could start that new movie with him arriving in Metropolis. You don't even need to explain his powers. He shows up and Lois Lane is like, I got to figure out who Superman is. And she traces back like Superman or super being sightings back to like Kansas. And that's how we find out, you know, there's clever ways to do it, right? We don't need like a straight up like see his origin story again. You're right.
Right. I feel like writing and storytelling has come far enough that we can have fun little nods to that, especially with like kind of the fan base that has been built around this kind of stuff. There's a very clever way to go about it. And I'm quite genuinely looking forward to how they approach that.
Yeah, it'll be good. I am curious. I liked Superman 2 more than the original Superman. How does it rank for you?
Honestly, I think I agree. You bring up some really good points about Christopher Reeve seeming more comfortable in the role. And whether that's his acting or just the way they wrote him, the Superman just feels more natural, which I appreciate. I discussed this last time, but I just wasn't a crazy big fan of a lot of the really weird scenes between him and Lois.
Right.
I feel like it felt a lot more wholesome in this movie, and just kind of like the Superman and Lois that I had like come to expect. And once again, it was fun to have like a like world-ending threat as kind of goofy and Bond villain as Lex's whole "I want beachfront property, let's sink California."
Yeah.
I liked having, you know, something that like there were like serious stakes involved, right? So yeah, you bring up some good points, and I know I acted surprised when you said the second movie was preferable, but now that I really think about it, I think you're entirely right on that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm just curious because even if you don't remember tons of it, you have seen these movies before, so like we always value each other's opinion, right? I'm always curious what perspectives you have, and I'm excited as we watch more of these, how developed our sense of Superman movies becomes.
Totally. And you brought up a good point while we were watching this one. You said it'll be especially exciting to watch Man of Steel, because that's probably the freshest Superman movie in both of our minds. And the most exciting, the most recent, right? Like it's got some incredible elements to it. And after seeing these first couple with just, you know, cheesy dialogue, maybe cheesy story writing and effects, it'd be kind of fun to see like how far they've come, and then especially this summer, how much further they're going to go.
Yeah, it'll be great to see the evolution. All right, so that's all for our conversation about Superman 2. We are going to be talking about the sneak peek trailer for the new Superman movie that came out last week. If you don't want to hear about this, you don't want like any spoilers, then thank you so much for listening. You can go ahead and end the episode. This will be the last thing. But if you want to hear our thoughts, then we're about to talk about that. So yeah, what a sneak peek. It started out with a very extended sequence of him being injured.
Yeah. I mean, just to start off, we were both like goosebumps the whole time, dude. I think that was brilliant on their part to give us such an extended sequence. It kind of helped us piece together just a small part of the story where we get to see Superman like badly beaten and broken. We still aren't quite clear on what happened. That was honestly a little bit like scary, seeing the Man of Steel like bleeding out and wheezing and like calling on Krypto to like save him.
Yeah, you're right. It's very different. We've seen Superman beat up before, but maybe not to the point where he like literally can't transport himself.
Yeah.
It was also interesting. If you remember when we talked about the initial teaser trailer, I thought that the shot of him like cradling the robot was going to be tied to like a break-in of the Fortress of Solitude, and that would lead to him being bleeding and cradling in the snow. And that is not the case. It's standing in this scene, you know, in the sequence that they showed us.
And it's good looking. Totally. Holy cow. You said it when we were watching it. They've come such a long way from the original Fortress of Solitude in Superman 1. It looks incredible.
Yeah, they killed it. And you pointed out that it's great how they have it appear as he gets close, kind of like a cloaking thing, so that you don't just see it from a helicopter, right? Like, it makes sense that it would stay hidden.
Right. One of the craziest elements, I think, were the robots.
Yeah.
That's not something that we've been familiarized with. It's typically, right, kind of holographic technology where he's able to, like, communicate with his past, kind of his family members or other people on Krypton. But, like, actual, like, helping hands is kind of a new one for them. They were analyzing him as they put him on the table, and that was kind of like a scary analysis where they were talking about broken ribs and bleeding lungs, right? Appendix, like broken.
Yeah, I mean, and you also were pointing out that they're really leaning into the sun being the source of his power. Like, it's kind of like his, I guess for humans, right? Like, if you're ill, it's probably a good idea to get outside, right? And get some of that sun to help you heal. But for him, it's like a million times more potent.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you saw them pulling out the magnifying glass and just being like, oh, this will fix you up in a few seconds. That sequence was crazy.
Yeah. It was also really fun, like, when Krypto first shows up, he's just doing his total dog energy, right? He's trying to mess around, and Superman's like, no, like, listen to me, right?
Right, he's like jumping on Superman. He's like, ah, Krypto, no.
Yeah. No, that was perfect dog riding right there.
Totally.
But as far as, like, the other shots in the trailer, we didn't get a ton new. Like, we got, like, just little bits here and there. Like, we got some more shots of Lex Luthor, which is fun.
We did get a shot of Lex Luthor kind of, like, bleeding and, like, his face is all scuffed up. I don't remember getting much of that in the original stuff.
Yeah.
But most of the shots were similar-ish to the original trailer.
It was a smart, like, whoever cut together that trailer, good for them, right? Because it gave us, you know, a lot of the same shots from the first teaser, but just enough more that it still gets us excited. And they killed it on the music. Ugh. It's very epic and superhero-y and just feels good.
Genuinely. Round of applause to them. They killed it, giving us, like, an actual sequence so we can start piecing together bits of the story. And they completely killed it with the emotion, with the music and the sequence. Like, it, I felt that one.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks again for sticking around. This has been a podcast on Infinite Earths, an unofficial DC Studios podcast. Next week, we're going to be talking about Superman 3. And thanks for listening.
We'll see you later.